Well, hello everybody, and welcome to our first of two group coaching calls here for September. Today's September 14th, 2017, and I say first of two because this month we actually have two calls, one on the last week of September. I find that it's really helpful before we disengage just to check in and make sure that you are set and I can address any questions that have come up as you've tried to catch up on the material and you're deploying, taking action on this stuff. So we'll have another call on the 28th, 2 weeks from today. Crazy to think that September is already halfway done. So as usual, guys, we're going to do just live Q&A. Everyone is on mute, so to ask a question, star 2 on your telephone keypad will raise your hand, star 2. If for some reason you are dialing star 2 and I'm not calling on you, and the way you'll know is I'll just say, hey, I don't see any raised hands right now, then please let me know by going to the call page. So there's an actual call page within the training portal. And typing in either the question or just letting me know, Ed, my hand's raised, it doesn't seem to be working. Something to that effect so that I'll know that that you're trying to ask a question. This happens occasionally, especially on cell phones, where you'll hit star 2 and the system won't recognize the command. But the one thing I wanted to remind everybody about is to only dial star 2 once, because if you do it again, it lowers your hand. So star 2 raises it. And just leave it there, and my system keeps a queue, and I can just go in order. So it's an open floor right now, and while I'm waiting for questions, there were a couple that were pre-submitted, so let me go to the first one from Tracy. Tracy says, how can I position myself as an expert when I don't feel like an expert? Great question, Tracy. This is something I really struggled with at first, because I was hearing and reading all this advice about positioning yourself as an expert, and you got to work on communicating your expertise, and I just thought, well, wait a minute, they must be writing this for somebody else, because I'm not an expert, I'm just starting out. And I have a couple of thoughts, because it's interesting, once I started landing clients, and now that I'm on the other side, here's what I can tell you. Looking back, two thoughts. First, to a sixth grader, so first year in middle school here in Georgia, a ninth grader, which is a first year high schooler, looks like a really big kid, right? So to a sixth grader, a ninth grader is a really big kid who knows a lot of stuff, but it's all relative, because the ninth grader doesn't feel very adequate. In fact, he or she is looking at the seniors in the high school and thinking, I'm just a little kid. So keep in mind that expert status or expertise is all relative. Keep in mind that if you've been studying the craft of copywriting, content marketing, you know more about writing marketing content and marketing copy than many of your clients do. A marketing director, a marketing manager, they have to know a little bit about a lot of different things, because writing is just a small part of everything that goes into what they do. You, on the other hand, have spent some time studying this stuff. Now, it doesn't mean that you're the authority on writing lead-generating emails, let's say, or on writing white papers. But there's a very good chance that you know more about the actual writing and the handling a project from the writing standpoint than they do. So that's the first thing you need to keep in mind. The second thing is you can very quickly showcase expertise by writing on a variety of different things, just putting out great content. And look, if you don't know, you want to write a piece on case studies, one aspect of case studies, you could do a ton of research and just present the information. And two things will happen when you do that. First, you'll learn a ton. And second of all, you'll be able to provide value and insight. And at the same time, you'll position yourself as an expert. I think we, in this country at least, elevate this whole title of expert. We put it on a pedestal. And, you know, believe me, you'll never feel like 100% expert. I mean, I shouldn't say never. Eventually, I just let go of that idea, and I realized, you know what, I'm fine with it. I'm fine calling myself an expert in a couple of different areas because compared to the majority of people that I'm working with, I am an expert, and I'm fine with it. I have worked with coaching clients who have a very, very impressive background. I'm talking from actual work experience, the things they've done, working for NASA. I've talked to people who have I got somebody right now who's got a graduate degree, actually undergraduate degree from MIT and a graduate degree from Harvard. I have somebody with also an MBA from Harvard. And it's interesting, these two last people I just mentioned, they're very insecure, and they don't feel they're experts. They don't feel like they're good enough. They don't feel like they have enough education or knowledge. And it's, you know, my point there is you never really feel like you arrive. If you constantly worry about this expert thing, oh, I don't think I'm an expert, then that will be the case. You will never feel that way, and it's going to come across. So I think you need to give up on that idea. Try some of these things. Just go ahead and put some information out there. Don't just put it out there. Do your research. Do a good job with it. In the process, you will become that ninth grader who's talking to the sixth grader. Okay, it's always relative. You'll never, if you go by that standard, there's never an absolute place that you need to reach in order to get that badge of honor. Because even people with degrees from MIT and Harvard don't feel adequate. So if that's not adequate, you know what is. I hope that makes sense, but Tracy, happy to talk with it a little bit more. There's a lot more practical elements of this. I just don't know where you want to take it. It sounded more like a mindset thing to me. That's why I wanted to address it that way. All right. Let's see. Again, star two if you have a question. We got Tracy. You are on. How are you?
I'm good, Ed. How are you?
Doing well. Good to talk to you.
Good. Good. It's good to talk to you, too. Thank you. So to further try and clarify my question, and thank you for responding to that. So would I maybe put together an article about marketing related to my niche? Is that kind of how I would position myself as an expert?
Well, first of all, keep in mind that you demonstrate expertise. You don't say it, right? So
Right.
So it's not, okay, I did this, so now I can go ahead and use that actual word in my copy. It's not about that. So that's one way you could do it. Like, you could write about a certain aspect of marketing, in your niche. I'm trying to think of a couple of examples that I've used. So when I wrote, I like using examples, and many times I'll take them outside of my target market even, just because a lot of people can relate to it. I was talking with a colleague. Keep in mind, my target market was enterprise software companies. And I was talking to a colleague of mine, an experienced tech marketer, and we were having this conversation over dinner about white papers and how people don't like to read white papers anymore. And it was a really interesting discussion. And I forget the details, but I was able to – that sparked an idea. I'm like, I could write about that. Do people even read marketing content anymore? And I did some research, and I found some great statistics, and I found some stuff, really cool stuff on behavioral psychology, and I just proved that you're right. They don't read it if it's not relevant and if it's not immediate, if it doesn't kind of align with one of their immediate priorities right now. But you better believe that if it's aligned with something that's hot on their plate right now, and it's written in a certain way, and it's digestible, and I named all the qualities, then they mm-hmm. are going to read it. You just can't help it. It's just human nature. So notice how an article like that, even if I've never written a white paper, I've only written one, that can help position me. I hate to use the word expert because, I think it's got all that negative connotation to it, but it can position mm-hmm. me as a knowledgeable resource on the topic, if that makes sense. So,
right.
Yeah, you can take something broad or you can take something more granular like what I just explained, right? It's an element of marketing in that particular target market.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
What do you have in mind? Let's talk about that. Maybe that will help too.
I guess I really don't know. I'm also questioning my niche because it seems like the companies are all huge. I decided on scientific product companies, manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like the companies are all really big, and I feel very inadequate when I'm addressing them.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, I'm sure they all, at least most of them, have their own marketing departments, and maybe they have their own in-house writers. And I have, I have written some warm emails and, and just suggested that I may be able to help with anything they have above, what they have the staff for. But I don't know. I'm feeling very inadequate.
Tell me about, because I don't remember the details, but you have a background in this area, right?
Yes.
What did you do?
I've been in a lab and in a research greenhouse and when I was at the university in a couple of different research labs. But, it's mostly just lab work, which is, of course, using the equipment that needs to be sold.
So I think this is really, I don't say this to make you feel bad or anything. I'm just telling you from an outsider looking in, I implore you to go after these companies anyway. You have no idea how well aligned you are with that market. If you were telling me, and this is why I walked everyone through those dimensions in session one, if you're telling me, I know, I think scientific products, they sound interesting to me. Okay, what's your background? I don't have any, but it just sounds like really cool stuff. If you were telling me that, I would say, Tracy, we need to go back to square one here. We need to get back to the drawing board. You have very relevant experience. You have a scientific background. You've worked in university labs, research greenhouses. You've used this equipment. You have a perspective that 99% of other writers don't have. I think you're making a lot of assumptions about what they have access to in terms of writer resources. I'll give you an example. I'm just telling you. I'm not saying this to motivate you and to cheer you up. This is truth. My buddy Gordon Graham, one of the world-renowned white paper writer, one of the top guys out there. He's done a ton of work for Google. And he told me the story. I still can't believe it. He said that somehow he got connected to Google before he had done any work for them. And they told him, the first guy he met with said, I'm so glad we're talking with you. We just can't find a writer. We just can't find writers.
Yeah.
Now, the irony is this is the world's largest search engine company, right? You'd think they'd be able to find a writer. Obviously, he didn't mean literally. I just, they meant we can't find a writer with this kind of background, with this kind of experience, or whatever they were looking for. But it was an eye-opener for him, and it was for me too, because it's a reminder that we assume too much. They probably already have things taken care of. They probably already have staff writers. They probably already have people working with them who have got way more experience. And here's the thing. What have you got to lose? You got nothing to lose and everything to gain. Because the worst that can happen is you get nowhere. But the best that could happen is you gain a client or two who end up being so grateful that you contacted them. I have a coaching client in another group right now, and she was in a similar situation. She's trying to pivot from kind of being a generalist into working with food and beverage companies. And she was striking out in a big way. And through warm email prospecting, she finally contacted a food company, right place at the right time. The guy said, "Oh my gosh, can we talk today? We've been looking for somebody. We have these product launches coming up in a couple of weeks, and we desperately need a writer." And had she just given up? I mean, that's what you're looking for. You're looking for a right place at the right time. So
right. That's
a long answer, Tracy, but
it's okay.
You definitely have the goods, okay? And don't worry, don't make too many assumptions. Just go for it. Your experience as a user and your work make you very qualified to go after them.
Okay. All right. It's psychological.
It is. And don't feel bad. Listen, I deal with this too. You know, you think I'm immune from it? I have to work with somebody. I have to work with a coach to help me with this for my own junk.
Really?
We all do. We all do, yeah. Well, we're too emotionally involved in our own stuff. We have too many mental blocks. It's easy for me to talk to you about this because I'm not close to it like you are. You're too close to it.
Yeah.
I'm too close to my own stuff. You know, I can detach, but to a certain point.
Yeah.
So, now, of course, this is the caveat here is, well, you know, as long as these companies are actually writing marketing materials, you know, I would think they are.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
If they are, then you got nothing to lose.
Right. And I've looked, and some of them are posting daily articles.
Oh, there you go.
Like on LinkedIn and stuff. So I know they are, but... then I doubt myself because I say, well, they're posting daily articles. They've got somebody.
That's who you want. That's who you want. If you sold watches for a living, who do you want to target? People who wear watches or people who don't wear watches?
Well, yeah, good point.
People who wear watches, right? I got a friend. I could care less about watches. I wear a watch, but I'm not. My wife keeps buying me, you know, like every couple of years she buys me a new watch. She says, "Oh, thank you so much. This is great." Honestly, I just don't care. I got a buddy who's got so many. He's got a wooden case with a glass lid for displaying them. He's very proud of his watches. People who are into watches buy a lot of watches. So you want where the demand already exists. That's actually, and I know it's counterintuitive, you want to go where they're already doing something because they get it. And just because they're putting it out there doesn't mean they're not struggling in the back end. It also doesn't mean that, okay, yeah, somebody on staff is writing that, but guess what? All these other things are coming up, and we're stretched too thin. We need outside help. What you don't want to do is go where they're not already doing it, which is what most newbies do. Oh, they should be doing this. Let me contact them and tell them all the things they should be doing. I can't believe they're missing out. You don't want to do that.
Okay. All right.
Cool?
Yes. Thank you.
All right. So in 2 weeks, I want to hear about, you know, who you contacted.
Okay. All right. And all right. And I gotta work on some articles to post somewhere, I guess. Maybe in my LinkedIn profile?
Yeah, do you have have you set up a blog on your site?
No.
Okay.
I could.
Do you have a WordPress website or is it through okay.
Yeah, it's a WordPress site.
All right, well, you got to be honest with yourself, so you decide, but just be honest when you make the decision. If you think it's something you can set up fairly easily, which usually is with WordPress,
yeah, sure.
Go ahead and activate the blog and then just start posting it there. Mm-hmm. My recommendation is to post on your blog the article, mm-hmm. and then 2 weeks later, post it to LinkedIn. If you go to LinkedIn Publisher, you can post it as an article there under your profile. So you're posting the same content. The whole idea is to write once, publish multiple times.
Okay.
But you want your blog to get kind of first dibs on it, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
Now, if you are honest with yourself and say, you know what, that's probably going to delay me a couple of weeks by the time I figure all that out, then skip the blog for now and mm-hmm. just start publishing in LinkedIn. But even more important, Tracy, would be to not let that get in the way of your prospecting. That is not a critical path item in the prospecting journey. You know, you don't need to do that before you start knocking on doors. So I would just continue prospecting, and if you end up with some extra time at the end of the week, then go ahead and do it.
Okay, so make prospecting is number one priority.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, be honest, right? If you had to eat, let's say that you're starving and you had to eat, you know, would you decorate your house for Halloween, or would you go out to the grocery store? You know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we'd be going to the grocery store.
Yeah.
Okay. So number one,
you gotta eat.
You gotta eat. You gotta eat. Okay, prospecting, and what should I consider? Some blend of like warm emails and maybe looking for work through a job site, like with an agency or something.
You can. My recommendation is to start with warm email prospecting for a couple of reasons. You'll get really used to that approach, and it's inefficient at first when you start. It takes a couple of weeks to get the hang of it. So you want to get over that hump. The second reason is that you might land a direct client, and it's usually better to land a client directly than through an agency because you'll earn more. But you can definitely do a hybrid strategy. After 2 to 4 weeks, you can start approaching agencies as well. And I talked about that in the last session and how to approach them and all that. But I wouldn't go there first necessarily. I would try the direct route first.
Okay. And I have done, you know, I have done some warm emails, but not a whole lot. Time hasn't been on my side lately either, but you know, I can't make excuses for not getting my own thing going either. So I need to focus and get into the routine, I guess, of warm email prospecting, and then maybe expand into something else. Okay.
Yeah, it's like, you know, get into the habit of going to the gym 3-4 days a week and building that routine before you start buying expensive equipment and fancy protein powders. And you know what I'm saying? It's like I think the fundamentals always go first.
Right.
And then you worry about the details. And by the way, when you go after agencies, the approach you take and the more specialized you are, like you, for instance, that's a very narrow specialty, but a good one because you have good experience in it. The better off you, the better you'll do with agencies, as long as you target the right ones. And the reason is the wrong message, and this goes out to everybody. This is really good advice. The worst thing you can do when approaching agencies is approach them with this message of, hey, I'm a writer in the Detroit area, and I see that, you know, you're also in Detroit. That's great. I would love to be considered for your overflow work. Two things wrong there. First of all, location is not a strong, meaningful connection. In other words, location is not a strong enough reason to say, hey, this is why I'm connecting with you, because we have this in common. That's not strong commonality. The second thing is positioning yourself as the helper, who when things are like spilling over, you can help catch them. That is a very low level value proposition, and it's a sure path to low fees and disappointment. So what you want to do is you want to find agencies that work with clients in scientific fields, even as broad as that, right? So it doesn't necessarily have to be lab equipment, and approach them because highlight and lead with your experience, because now you become an invaluable resource. It's not just a helper. Now you're actually an asset. In fact, I know several freelancers who, because they have gone with that approach, they have become a strategic advantage for the agency. Not only did they use them for this particular client, but now they're pitching new clients and using you as their secret weapon. You see what I'm saying? Like, hey, Tracy, you know, we got somebody who's, you know, she's got 20 years experience in this stuff.
Yeah.
And they're kind of packaging you as part of the firm.
Right. Okay. Well, that would be good. That would give you some more leverage, too.
Yeah, and it's steady work, and it's great. The danger, and we're getting ahead of ourselves, but the danger is that, you know, it's easy to just rest on your laurels there. And suddenly 100% of your income is coming from that agency, which, you know, you're not diversified.
Right. Okay. Can't put all the eggs in one basket.
You got it. So, yeah,
right,
2 weeks. Let me know how you do.
All righty. Thank you so much.
All right, Tracy. You're welcome. All right. Let's see. We got I got a phone number out of Erie, Pennsylvania, 8850, last four digits, and then I got Bill right after this one. So just FYI.
Hi, Ed. It's Wes.
Hey, how are you, Wes?
Hi, doing pretty good.
Good.
So my first question, last summer, about a year ago, I decided to try to go after CPA firms as clients, and I ended up talking to the marketing director of a firm in San Francisco. And one of the questions that she asked me was if I had any other San Francisco CPA firms as clients. And and that got me to thinking, you know, at some point with the way that we're trying to position ourselves as an expert in a particular industry, aren't we going to end up with two or more clients who are direct competitors of each other? You know, do you foresee this situation ever being a problem if it does happen, or am I just overthinking this particular point?
No, it does happen, Wes. Here's what I would say, though. It falls into that category of things I thought were going to be a big problem that ended up not being a big problem.
Okay.
Right? How many things in life are that way, right? And it's like the real problems were other things that I hadn't thought of. Let's just take this example. This is a great example. CPA firms, you know, there's thousands of them all over the country. And even if you had highly unlikely, but let's just say that you had another – you're not in San Francisco, are you?
No, I'm not. I'm in Texas.
Okay. So let's say that you did have another CPA firm in San Francisco. The chances of them being competing are also unlikely. Mm-hmm. So statistically speaking, this is not a situation you're probably going to run into a lot. Plus the fact that you can only physically work with 3 to 5, 6 clients at any given time, right? Mm-hmm. In client, the average life of a client, you know, it's all over the place, but 6 months to 3 years is probably where
typical.
90% of them fall. So when you look at all those factors, you realize, you know, it's not an issue. It is a bigger issue when you are really, really narrow. You know, CPA firms that work, that do this kind of tax work that's really creative for Fortune 50 companies. you know, there's probably three of them out there kind of thing. I'm exaggerating, but yes, those are going to be direct competitors. That's it. But we wouldn't get that narrow unless you had plenty of experience already. You knew the lay of the land. You already know what you're getting into. That's going to be very rare for someone to get that narrow right off the bat.
Yeah. So you know, I've pivoted a little bit from CPA firms to management consulting firms to start off with, and it sounds like, you know, I may get one firm every now and then that may come up as an issue, but there should be plenty more that, at least to start off initially, that shouldn't be an issue for me.
Absolutely. Yeah. I wouldn't worry about it. If he did run into it, it would just think of it as coincidence. Think, oh, wait a minute. Let me rethink this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you. My second question. So something I had never really thought about until you mentioned it in your review of my website, and that was providing strategic planning or consulting services to complement the writing projects. So when we talk about writing a blog post or a white paper or any other type of a writing project, is it correct to think of the fees that we quote as being strictly for the writing and the corresponding research of that specific project? And anything else that we may do to help the client would be considered strategy or consulting services. Is that a okay way to think about that?
Yeah, and I don't remember what I put in there for comments. But can you refresh my memory?
Well, yeah, just a quick illustration. You know, so my first client that I wrote about 30 blog posts for over the course of about 3 years. So it was a $20-25 million software company. In addition to writing the blog posts, the marketing director asked me to help brainstorm different ideas for blog posts. You know, would you have considered this brainstorming and planning of article ideas to be a consulting service that I should have charged an extra fee for?
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. So there's a couple of ways you could do it. My rule of thumb, and there's different opinions on this, by the way, so this is not the end-all be-all. My rule of thumb is, let's use that example. If the brainstorming and consulting work is directly tied to the deliverable, and that brainstorming and strategic work is fairly clear-cut, then I would rather build that into my fees for the blog post. So in other words, and I like that because now I can justify higher fees for my writing, right? And that's the way I grew my business. It's like, look, I'm charging you $5,000 or $6,000 for a white paper, but you know, I'm helping you with all these other aspects of it and thinking through what are we going to do with it. So I'd rather do that. And I think most clients, and I don't think, I know most clients prefer that. They appreciate it because they really value your opinion. And when they're not paying for it separately, it just adds to the value of the project. Where a separate consulting fee makes sense is when the project scope is very undefined, not clearly defined. So, hey, we know we want to do this, but we're not sure what that looks like or even if we want to do it or how we want to do it. And, you know, we could really use your help. And not only that, but we're probably talking about like a full day on site and that kind of thing. That feels to me more like a, you know, kind of like a road mapping session, strategy session, in which we will then, the byproduct of that might be a deliverable that maps out what we're going to do, and then that what we're going to do is going to be a project for you.
Okay.
So think of it as a planning, brainstorming session that has a deliverable, and I'll explain why in a minute. That makes sense. So let me give you an actual example of that, a very common one. It's like, we want to revamp our website, but we're not really sure what that looks like. you can't really give them a quote on the copy for the website if they don't even know how they're going to approach it, what that looks like, right? So you break it up into two parts, and the first part is the planning and design of the content, with maybe a document with your recommendations, a proposed site map, and so forth. And you charge for that separately. And then once they go about it, or once they decide, yes, this is what we want to do, or we want to do it, but a little bit differently, then you have something concrete you can quote. But until you've defined it, you don't mm-hmm. have anything you can quote. So in a way, it kind of helps you. Those are great projects because you're able to really entrench yourself into that opportunity. You're the trusted advisor. You're the obvious choice. You can help define the parameters, and then the chances that you'll get the gig are pretty darn high.
Mm-hmm. Now, with either your personal experience or those experiences of your coaching clients, are there businesses out there that would be open to someone helping them with the strategy as opposed to just as you put it in my website review, just instead of being just an order taker, this is what I want written, I'm looking for a freelance writer to do that. Are there businesses out there that would be open to collaboration on strategy?
Absolutely. The warning I would give you, though, is just because they are there, I wouldn't necessarily lead with that. So, in other words, I wouldn't.
Okay.
When you're prospecting, don't say, I provide strategy, right?
Okay.
I provide messaging strategy, for instance, because that doesn't sell very well. Those are harder projects to get in the door with. But something really concrete and tactical, like a white paper, white paper work, for instance, blogging, those are tactical enough that it's easier to get in the door. My strategy has always been, and this has been proven over and over again, in our business, get in the door with something tactical, not like really low level, but something mid-level, high-level tactical, mm-hmm. still tactical. Once you're in and they see how you work and they trust you and they like you, then look for other opportunities, then have other discussions.
Okay. That makes sense. What was
There are cases, though, but here's the other thing I would say. There are cases where it does make sense to kind of lead with a strategy. Mm-hmm. And if you do that, I know Bill, for instance, in this group, he's looking to go in with business plans, business planning mm-hmm. and strategy. But what makes it really work there is take it away from the abstract and make it as concrete as possible. And by that, I mean talk about a deliverable, something tangible they will get at the end. Not just the benefit, but like you will end up with this. And it's a document mm-hmm. where I will detail all these things because that makes it easier to approve and to digest internally
okay.
in the organization.
Okay. What was the Google email service you mentioned in a previous coaching call that you like to use?
Oh, yeah. Google, I think it's Google at Work.
Google at Work, okay.
Yeah, Google at Work. Business Solutions for Enterprise, Google Cloud. Yeah.
Okay. So if I just type in Google at Work, it'll take me to it. Okay.
It will, yeah. Okay. And they have several services. One of them is email. It looks like it's G Suite, but if I typed in Google at Work and it took me there.
Okay, great. Hey, I appreciate your help.
Yeah, it's gsuite.google.com, but if you do Google at Work,
okay.
it will take you there.
Okay. All right, Ed, I appreciate your help. Have a good day.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks, Wes. Yeah, and I recommend that. So here's the thing, guys, for those of you who are wondering what this is about. I found out the hard way that the email service or email hosting that comes with your web hosting, in most cases, is just junk. It's okay to start out with that, but eventually what you'll find is the performance is not great, and then you start getting a lot of spam, and it's just a pain. I fidgeted with the filtering controls of my email account for years, and I couldn't get it right. And then what really frustrated me is when I would call tech support, they would act like, well, I don't know, something must be wrong with you because, you know, we have amazing spam filtering. And then I found out later through to somebody who really knows what they're doing that web hosting companies hate to offer email hosting. They throw it in as part of your web hosting package just because they have to, but they do a really poor job with it because they hate doing it. So they have a crap service. Google for Work, or in, I guess it's called the G Suite, it's enterprise class email hosting. It is fantastic. I cannot describe to you, and I keep in mind my email address has been floating around for years by this time, maybe 12 years. So I was getting about 200 emails a day, 200, you heard that right, and I would say well more than half, maybe 60-70% were complete spam. What's the problem with deleting it? The problem is it was adding up. It was taking so much time and so much frustration that it was becoming an issue. As soon as I moved, 95% of it was eliminated, and within the next month, once I trained the system to learn it, to learn my what was spam and what was not, 99% of it is filtered out now, at least 99%. So great stuff. Also, if your website happens to go down, your email doesn't go down because it's hosted separately. So check it out. $5 a month is what I pay per account. I have several email accounts, but $5 a month, it's a no-brainer. All right, so I don't see any raised hands. I know Bill, I saw your hand raised earlier, but I think you dropped out and called back in. I'm not sure if – oh, here we go. Okay. Okay, Bill, you're on. How are you?
Good, Ed. How you doing?
Doing well. Good talking to you.
Good to talk to you, too. And just want to say how much I appreciate your approach in all this. Mainly, and I've heard it from Wes and I've heard it from Tracy and a lot of other people that post on Facebook you really understand that the mental part of this is huge. Your content is excellent, but what I really get the most out of is when you speak to the mental aspect of this, because this is really where I have a struggle, and a lot of what, you know, Tracy and Wes have just said kind of resonates with me. So I just wanted to thank you for that.
Oh, thank you, man. I appreciate that. Thank you. It's good to know, because sometimes I wonder if I'm straying too far to that side. But I do believe it's very important. I think many people underestimate, until they get out there, right, how important it really is. But so it's good to know that you recognize that. Thank you.
Yeah, because I'm very gung-ho and very ready to send warm emails and write website copy and do all those things. But to me, it's the mental part of it, you know, the positioning. How do I present myself? Am I ready for this? Are there enough clients out there for me? Is there a demand out there for my services? This is the kind of thing that I struggle with all the time, and I hear some of that, like just from Tracy and Wes, you know, and some of the things that they've said as well. I wanted to ask you something, and I know you had talked about this with Wes. My initial positioning in this was, of course, to write business plans, as you had mentioned. But one of the things I'm struggling with is, even though I know I can do it, I'm wondering about what I'm struggling now with is there a demand for it? Is there enough of a demand out there for that service that I can go out and pursue a client? What, on my website, I list myself as consulting, and I'm wondering if that, in your opinion, is not positioning myself correctly, because I feel like I'm leading with, like you had just mentioned it, I'm leading with something strategic, because consulting kind of gives a connotation that I'm offering like a strategic service. But what I'm really offering is that and, you know, something tangible, a business plan. My question is, what do you think leading with or having kind of consulting in the name kind of sends the wrong message?
You know, it's a tough call because you really don't know for sure until you get out there, right?
Right.
So all we can do for now is just make some educated guesses. And there's a market for everything. I mean, there's a market for people who are actually looking for a consultant. There's a market for people who, you know, they don't want the consultant. That sounds big and expensive. That sounds like a long engagement. They're looking for something tangible. So you really don't know until you get out there. And this is why I love starting with your relationships. Hello? Can you hear me? Bill, I think you guys can hear me. I think I lost you. I'll tell you what, I don't want to give you the answer. It looks like you dropped off. I don't want to give you the answer while you're gone. So I'll wait till you dial back in. In the meantime, guys, we got an open floor right now, so star 2 if you have a question or want to discuss an issue, and that will give me time to get Bill back on. All right, let's see. We got D'Angelo. Hey, D'Angelo, how are you?
Hey, what's going on?
Not much, man. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, man. Look, I had a quick question. As far as I just wrapped up, well, a couple of weeks ago, I wrapped up my first pro bono project. Since then, I've kind of repositioned myself as opposed to just approaching, you know, writing for companies who want to reach technical. I just went ahead and went with what I have the expertise in now, which is the energy and utilities industry.
Okay.
I was avoiding that for a while, but. So that's my positioning now. But the pro bono assignment that I did was for an event coordinator. Needed some copy for a sales deck. So my question is, now that's kind of wrapped up, do I even need to reach out to them for a sample and testimonial since it's not related directly to my niche? Or do I kind of just chalk that up to experience?
So the deck you just wrapped up, was that in the energy and utilities industry or outside of it?
It wasn't. It was for an outside event.
Oh, now okay. You know, I would still try to get a testimonial from them, and you know, keep that as a sample because. If you somebody wants to know if you do presentation decks, even if it's outside of the industry, it shows that you know you can take content and distill it into a presentation, into PowerPoint. So I would still keep it.
That's true.
But it wouldn't be something I would necessarily highlight or showcase unless you really need the samples for your samples page. You know.
Right.
So now in terms of energy and utilities, did you pivot in that direction? What was the reasoning behind going there?
Well, I felt like my website, and I redid my website too, but I felt like my website was a little too broad. I wanted to be somewhat broad based off what I learned in the lessons to attract more people, but I just felt like it was too broad. And I've found myself not being able to really describe what it is that what my audience was. And I got that from a few people that I reached out to as well. So I think by focusing it on that particular industry, I was able to reach out, kind of focus my warm email prospecting as well. So now I can reach out to the companies in that niche as opposed to trying to reach companies that just target technical audiences.
Okay. Gotcha. I have an ex-coaching client. You may want to check out his website, too, by the way, because he focuses on energy.
Okay.
And it's michaeltevlin.com. I'm trying to go there. It's not, I think his website might be down. Michael Tevlin is T as in Tom, E as in Edward, V as in Victor, L-I-N as in Nancy. So check it out, because he's he does some really cool stuff there. And his focus is technology, and so you may, you know, you may get some inspiration there in terms of how he's approaching it, what types of companies, and you know what resonates with him.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you bet. So yeah, but you know, if it gives you focus, then I think that's good. And as long as you have something you can speak to there, right, in terms of energy and utilities, you have some even tangential experience in that industry, then I think you're fine. As long as it's not a, well, it sounds interesting, I don't know much about it, but then it's going to be kind of a stretch, you know?
Right, right. I actually was an engineer for a electric utility industry. I mean, electric utility for good number of years, so
okay,
I do
perfect.
Have that hands-on experience. Yeah,
perfect. And make sure to look at everything around that industry, because there's software, there's all kinds of technology around it, not just the right, as you know, kind of the pure play companies. There's all kinds of services. So there's a lot going on there, as you know. I think it's
for sure.
Be really good for you.
All right, I'll go that route. I appreciate it.
You bet. All right. All right, looks like Bill is back. Bill, you there?
Yes, I am, Ed. Sorry about that. I'm in the woods in upstate New York, and I think the reception got the best of us. So
That's all right. Yeah. Don't worry. So here's where I left off.
Okay.
This is why I'm such a strong believer in starting with your network. Because your network is very forgiving, and your network will enable you to connect with potential prospects who can really guide you along the way as to what's going to resonate more with them.
Okay.
So, you know, one approach you could take, Bill, is just keep it as consultant right now, but as you engage in some conversations with potential prospects or with prospects and people who actually want to talk to you about, I think it will become apparent. I think that answer is going to, it's just going to surface. Because we can double, triple guess ourselves all day long. And it might be something completely different. So start there and see what you find. And then we can figure out what makes the most sense. But, you know, those are all different strategies. Again, leading with something that's got a tactical aspect to it, like an actual deliverable, can help for sure, like we talked about with Wes. The other thing that can really help, if you're starting to see, and this is why we need that kind of feedback, it's hard to really guess. If you're finding that a lot of companies, they're very interested, but they're not sure if they want to commit to like a full-fledged business plan, see if you can come up with kind of an entry-level service, like some sort of audit, like a low-cost. It can't be too low-cost because it's going to sound low-value, but just off the top of your head, I mean, if what do you think a business plan engagement would go for? $5,000,
well,
$2,000?
Yeah, I was throwing around the idea of like $4,000 to $7,000, depending on how much information you would have to extract from the client and the management of the client. You know, some businesses are pretty simple. Others have, you know, kind of niche markets that would require more research. Where I think I add a lot of value is in kind of the financial part of it, which is taking all of the ideas that people have within their business and quantifying it and using that information to project what their income would be, you know, years down the road, and projecting out their cash flow so that they can kind of take proactive steps in their business.
Mm-hmm.
And,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so it's the financial aspect of it. That's great. Just as a backup, then, if you start getting that, where it's like, you know, it's a big commitment, they're not sure, and right. it's a risk issue, right?
Right.
For them, then you might want to come up with a lower level package where, let's just say, for $500, you can do kind of a high level scan of certain items, and deliver a set of recommendations, findings, and recommendations. Something that, on its own, and I'm not talking about just like be cheap and about it, but something that would be worth many times the $500 in terms of value.
Right.
But it would be easy right. enough for you to prepare that you can at least cover your costs. It's not going to be a profitable. It's going to be a loss
right.
later. And that's something like in my business. There's several things I could do there. Like, you know, I could spend an hour looking at a freelancer's business, ask several questions, and then maybe another hour just kind of digesting all of that and come up with something that would be of really, really high value, and I wouldn't have to charge too much for it. And then that
right.
becomes a stepping stone for doing more work at a higher price point.
Okay. Yes, no, I appreciate that. That's a great idea. Could I ask one other question? I volunteer as an associate pastor. Okay, so and I write my own messages and sermons, and I'm used to writing 3,500 to 4,000 word. What are essentially speeches, you know, messages and speeches that have to be, of course, logically written and written to maintain the audience's interest. And, you know, so I'm comfortable writing those type of pieces. I've also written, ironically, I've written for a CPA firm. I've written there, I had in the past written blog posts for their tax planning business. Which is ironic because I'm an accountant and I'm not a CPA, and the reason I'm not a CPA is because I hate taxes. But I wound up writing their tax planning post. So, you know, I'm comfortable with kind of extended pieces. You know, I feel I would do well writing case studies and white papers and blog posts and those type of things. Is there a way to kind of incorporate all that into one package and offer that to the client?
The package meaning what would be in the
along,
package?
Along with, you know, let's say business plans and kind of the strategic work, also offering the possibility of writing, you know, white papers and blog posts and that type of thing. For small manufacturers who, you know, you can provide the financial service to them, but also kind of write these extended pieces for them as well.
Mm-hmm. My instinct tells me that I wouldn't bundle it together at first. I would take it one step at a time. Lead
okay.
with one or the other, get in the door, and then have a separate conversation once you've completed the first project, whichever way you're going to go.
I see.
Because those are two very separate things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, many times it's going to be somebody else helping to make the decision from the person who hired you,
mm-hmm.
because you might be working with a CFO or the controller and one thing, but you're just talking about something that's going to be more to whoever handles their marketing, even if they don't have an official marketing title. With a lot of these companies, you know how it is, right? It's like, oh, you know,
right.
Julie handles the marketing stuff when we do have it.
Right.
So it's a different decision maker. It's a totally different thing. And if you try to bundle them together up front, it could create some confusion.
I see.
You know, it's
okay.
like, you know, you get in the door with a customer to do their landscaping, and then they also want to bundle in home chef services because the owner's wife happens to be a home chef. You know?
yeah.
So it's two totally different things, I think.
Right. Right. You have to have a relationship with the client at that point. You know, it's too diverse a portfolio essentially to offer the client at one time. And it's
yeah, but I think once you have their trust, I think that's an easy conversation to start. And mm-hmm. you know, the fact that you can do that, I mean, don't underestimate that skill. I don't think you do, but if you can write a persuasive talk, which is what a sermon is, you know, that's 30, 40 minutes. I mean, that's a skill. There's storytelling there. You're making a case for an idea. You know how to mm-hmm. keep things focused to one single idea, how to support all of that. There's so much that goes into that. I think mm-hmm. you can take that into many different directions. You know, of course, there's the case study white paper angle, which is kind of obvious, but there is also speech writing for executives. There's mm-hmm. also book ghostwriting. For
okay.
different audiences, which is a whole different animal, by the way. But
right.
But in terms of marketing and how you market it, but in terms of your skill, you could absolutely mm-hmm. do that mm-hmm. if you wanted to. Okay. Oh, I think I lost him again. All right. Bill, I lost you. So if you had any other questions, just dial back in. All right. So let's see. I'm going to star two, if you have a question while I'm waiting. I noticed that in the forum, Tracy had a question. Let me see here. How should I address a warm email when my LinkedIn contact is connected to the business manager rather than the marketing director at a prospect's company? I've asked my friend to introduce me, but she hasn't done so yet, and I don't want to nag her. I followed up once. I was just going to email the business manager and point out the shared connection, but should I be writing to the business manager if there's a marketing director? Okay, so you know, let me summarize. The way I'm reading it, Tracy, is you know the business manager at this company, and you've asked her, hey, can you introduce me to the marketing director? She said yes, but she hasn't done it, or maybe she hasn't even responded to that. And now you're wondering, gosh, I don't want to nag my contact there. Should I just go straight to the marketing director? And I would say at this point, depending on your relationship with your contact there, if it's somebody I knew really well, I may follow up just once. You know, so if I send an email to Brian 2 weeks ago, and let's say he said, yeah, sure, no problem, but he hasn't done it, or maybe he didn't respond. If it's been a week or two, I may follow up. Hey, Brian, just checking out on this. Didn't want to be a pest, but, you know, whatever. That's if I had a decent relationship. If I don't, then what I do is I just pretty much stop, and then I go ahead and contact the marketing director at that point and mention the relationship. I don't think you have much to lose. You're not overstepping boundaries here. I don't think you're – or misinterpreting your relationship. You know, you really do know this person. So now what you don't want to do is the obvious things, right? Like, hey, Julie said I should contact you and, you know, whatever. That hasn't happened, so don't say it. But, yeah, follow up one time with your contact, and if still no answer, then go ahead and reach directly to that person. All right. We got a hand raise. Last four digits of phone number 9439. Looks like a Columbia, South Carolina number. You're on.
It's me, Tracy.
Hey.
Hey. Sorry about that.
How are you?
I'm good. Still good. How about you?
Doing well. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you again. Thank you. Okay, so my contact is not at this company. It's a friend of mine who has a connection, a LinkedIn connection, with the business manager at this company.
Ah, okay.
And she's the type of friend that I could. She said she would make the introduction, and I followed up once. I don't want to keep asking, but
okay.
So is it worth it? I mean, I will ask her again, but is the connection, if she does introduce me to the business manager, what do I do with that then? Do I write to him, or do I, you know what I mean? Like, he's the business manager, not the marketing director.
Oh, okay, gotcha. So
I can get a connection to the business manager, but I don't have a direct connection to the marketing manager.
You know, I would start, you could go either way, but I would start with the business manager because that's where you have the introduction.
Mm-hmm.
And try that route and ask, you know, hey, here's what I do. I focus on companies like yours, and you just be specific, right? In other words, you want them to understand, look, I'm not just targeting everybody. I actually work with companies just like yours to help them do this. I'd love to the opportunity to connect with, Julie Smith, blah, 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 blah. Would you be willing to make an introduction or forward her my info? And if that doesn't work, then that's when you go straight to the marketing director. Just because if your friend introduces you to her contact, I think that's generally speaking a higher probability situation than going direct cold to the ultimate contact.
Okay, and then just kind of use that though. So when I do write to the, assuming I get that connection, I'll write to the business manager and say, you know, hey, I'm glad Brenda introduced us. This is what I do. And should I ask him to maybe pass my information along to the marketing director?
I would write it as a warm email, though. It's
because
that rule still applies, that structure.
Okay.
Hi, Jill. Thanks, Brenda, for introducing us, for making the connection. Jill, great to meet you. I asked Brenda to make the connection because I noticed this about you guys, right? So that's what you notice, the structure of the warm email starts there. And this is what I do, and I was curious, or I wanted to see if you could introduce me to marketing director to see if it might make sense for us to have a conversation. So I wouldn't say, would you forward my information? I like to leave it open like that because it kind of implies, can you make that introduction?
Yeah. And then would I do this through LinkedIn, since that's where the connection is?
I would do this over email if at all possible.
Okay.
Yeah, I think anytime you can take it out of LinkedIn, because the problem with LinkedIn is, you know, it can feel very mechanical there, right? I think LinkedIn has a feature where people can, if you ask me to connect, if I could connect you with my friend Bill, I could do it through LinkedIn, but it's very mechanical.
Yeah. Okay.
It just doesn't feel very human. And I understand LinkedIn is trying to streamline that process, but think about the difference between that and getting kind of an automated email message from LinkedIn, as opposed to I'm writing my friend Bill, copying you, telling Bill, hey, Bill, it's my friend Tracy. I wanted to connect the two of you because, you know, she's doing some really cool stuff and, you know, she might be able to help you. That's a big difference.
Right.
You know, it's a personal introduction as opposed to automated.
Okay. Just feels more personal coming from an email address.
Yeah, definitely.
Versus
it just begs to be answered.
Message.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, cool. I can work that out.
So, yeah, try that route, and
you already
have your backup plan, right? It's the,
yep.
Well, I'll
yep.
just go straight to the marketing director.
Yeah.
And, of course, at that, now that I understand, in that case, you can't say, hey, I know Jill, because you don't know Jill. You know Brenda, who knows Jill.
Yeah. Right.
But then
right.
you can, that's fine. You can just go with your standard warm email structure.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. I guess I could always refer to having found the company through a mutual, well, maybe it's not a mutual contact.
Yeah, that's what.
Yeah, maybe not. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a strong, meaningful connection. Is
yeah.
I know this about, or I know about you because, you know, and it depends on what you pick as your meaningful connection.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be better than a friend of a friend knows you. Maybe. Maybe
a friend of a friend
you.
Of a friend. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
My neighbor's dog's vet has a friend who.
Exactly. All righty, cool. Thank you again, Ed.
Oh, you're welcome. All right. So star two, if you have a question, want to discuss an issue, challenge, anything's really fair game. By the way, a couple of you have submitted website copy reviews this week. Just know that I saw them. I am going to get those done tomorrow, and we'll post those there in the review thread. So I haven't forgotten about you. I have some time carved out tomorrow to get those done. All right, guys, I don't see any other questions, so we'll go ahead and wrap it up for today. You know, we got about a two-week stretch here, actually a two-week stretch between now and the last group coaching call. My challenge to you would be, you know, put as much of this as you can in action. So don't worry if you've been procrastinating, you know, life has gotten in the way. That happens. I get it. But really do your best to implement as much of this as possible, because that's when you really learn. That's when things start to happen. You know, nothing will move if you don't move. So move on this stuff. You'll hopefully get some results. And at a minimum, here's what will happen is that's when the real questions start to come up, right? And many of you have been asking today. You wouldn't have had those questions if you hadn't taken action and actually gotten a result, which brought up some questions you hadn't thought of. So take some action. Give yourself something very specific that you're going to do between now and the next coaching call, and that way that will spur some questions and some discussion that we can get into on the 28th, the call on the 28th. So with that, we'll go ahead and get this replay posted by tomorrow. We'll send out an email when that's up. You guys have a great rest of the day, a fantastic weekend, and we'll talk again real soon. Take care.